Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro filling in for Jake Stanziano. I'm hosting the Jake and Gino podcast. I am here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the chef, the coach, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy.
Baby. You said the G-Daddy. That's actually pretty good.
That is the first and painful, last time. Yes. But I do feel like my life is complete now. Because
a lot of people say that.
I feel like that I got to share Jake's enjoyment in the beginning of your podcast.
Listen, we have a great show today. We're going to be welcoming Paul Hutchison to the show. He's the primary investor and executive producer of the film Sound of Freedom, starring Jim Caviezel. Paul founded the Child Liberation Foundation, an organization actively involved in the fight against child trafficking, and has contributed to or been directly involved in rescuing over 5,000 children. Prior to his child rescue work, he was a co-founder of Bridge Investment Group Partners, which now has over $48 billion in assets under management. We are going to be talking business on the show too, by the way. Just want to let you know, that's just a little thing. Mm-hmm. Paul, welcome to the show. It's an honor and a privilege to have you on.
Thank you, Gino. And Julie, it's great to meet you as well.
Do you mind if I share a quick story with you of how my wife roped me into watching the movie?
Sure.
Real quick. It's July 1st. I'm sitting at home and my wife says, do you want to go watch a movie with Jim Caviezel? I said, I love Jim. I mean, come on. Jesus, The Passion. I mean, yeah, Person of Interest. I'm ready. I'm going. So we get to the movie theater and the Regal. We're trying to get our tickets. You need to have like a PhD to buy tickets in a movie theater right now. I felt stupid. So Michael there is helping me out get the tickets. And I look over and I see the board and I'm like, what's this movie about? And she says, well, wait. So I have this feeling in my stomach. I go sit down. The movie starts. And the first scene, I get this profound sadness. And I see the first scene and I just say to her, I got to leave. I do not want to be here anymore. I came to watch people blow up and have action. I don't want to experience this right now. And all I have to say is I'm thankful that I stuck through it and that we live in a bubble and I wanted to see that. And I live in Jacksonville, Florida, right in St. Augustine, which has got a massive problem. And it's all around us and it's permeated our entire society. And I felt at the end of the movie that I had to have a moral obligation to watch the movie, to be able to promote it, to be able to donate to these charities. So, you know, wonderful job for doing the movie. And I know you guys only spent $14 million. You've been able to get it out there. Thanks for starting the movie. My first question is, how did you even come up with the idea, the plot of the movie? I mean, what was the genesis of that?
Well, the plot of the movie was super easy. That was the easiest part because it really happened. Mm-hmm. The focus of the movie was around the rescue mission that we did almost 10 years ago in Cartagena, Colombia. And that was my first undercover rescue mission. And a Homeland Security agent who had been doing undercover work for almost 10 years was introduced to me by our Attorney General, Sean Reyes. And I was a successful business owner and had very, very successful companies at the time. I'd also had some training from some previous lives that make me somewhat safe in a dangerous place. And I had compassion for children and willing to donate whatever was needed to help kids in super sad situations. I was on the Make-A-Wish board of directors and incoming chairman for Make-A-Wish in the Utah area. And that storyline of the mission that we did in Colombia was the focus of the Sound of Freedom movie. In fact, at the end of that rescue, I was there. My part in the movie is Pablo. It's the halfway through when Tim says, "Hey, I can't leave my government job. I can't really do this rescue mission. But if I can convince Pablo, then everything will work out." Well, I was running a multi-billion-dollar real estate investment fund. I had donated huge amounts of money to child-related charities, and he knew that if I could get behind this, that not only my money, but I could bring in a lot of other investors and donors that would get behind this movement. And so when I got that phone call from the Attorney General, and he said, "Paul, I need to talk to you about something that's kind of heavy. It's dark. It's the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world, and good people don't even know that it's happening." And he was talking about human trafficking, and in this case, specifically child trafficking. And the call that really changed everything for me was after I had learned about the foundation, learned about what was going on in Colombia, helped with raising some money, introducing some people, and then I got a phone call from the Homeland Security agent. And he said, "Paul, I'm in Cartagena, Colombia. there's not just 20 children here. There's more than 50. There's more than 100 children in the surrounding areas. And I need your help to rescue all these kids. And I said, well, how much do you need? And he said, I need you. Can you be in Colombia in 2 days? He said, the head trafficker down here has a piece of property. He wants to develop into a child brothel sex resort. He needs a few million dollars to do it. And we need to get him to call the other traffickers and get them to bring all their children to the same place at the same time so that we can rescue them all. He said, we believe he'll do that and make those calls if he believes that the only way that you're going to fund his sex resort hotel is if he can prove to you that he can fill it and be successful with it by having a sex party for you and your buddies with all of these children. And so, you know, I won't go into all the details. We can do that later in the film. But the thing that changed my life was sitting there on this chair, 54 children in the other room. We're outside by this table, and the traffickers get up and say, Pablo, I have to show you the gifts I brought you. And he comes back out. He's in there for like 10 minutes, and we get to hear a few of the children crying, scared to death to come out and meet these men who are going to defile them. And 10 minutes later, he comes out with 4 virgins, scared to death. 3 little girls, 1 little boy. This little boy, they gave him cocaine that morning because he was so scared it was going to hurt. What kind of effed up monster thinks that that's attractive? And this little girl, the same one in the movie that they called Princess, in real life, she was actually there at that party on the island. We combined 8 different rescue stories for the storyline of the movie itself. She was there. She was standing in front of me, tear stains on her makeup face, scared to death, shaking. She was looking at me like I was this enemy, like this person who was going to take her virginity. And everything in me wanted to just say, no, it's not going to happen. You're going to see your parents again. I couldn't say that. I took her little hands. I said, Estebien, it's okay. And she went back in the house. And after the agents came and stormed the party and arrested everybody, and the Child Protective Services people came in with the children, and they started laughing and singing, that sound of freedom was the most beautiful sound that I ever heard. And I started crying. And I told that story 100 times over the next couple of years to all my investors, to different people, of how that sound of laughter compared to the crying half an hour before was so impactful in my life that we needed to make this into a movement, into a movie. I'm not a movie investor. I'm a real estate investor. But if this could transform the hearts of millions of people and help them see what I saw face to face and motivate them to have a change of heart, then whatever money we had to put into a movie was going to be worth it.
A couple of points. The first one, Paul, if I had to have someone act myself, I'd pick Brad Pitt. I think you did okay, but I think I like more of the Brad Pitt look in the movie. So
I'm a Brad Pitt kind of guy. I don't know what to say to that. Yeah.
We did look at a few U.S. actors to play me instead of Eduardo Verástegui, but Eduardo was the producer of the film. He was the one. I actually met him before Tim or anybody else. We were in Los Angeles at a gala, a Grammys after party, and Pierce Brosnan was there, and the former president of Mexico was there, and Eduardo Verástegui was there. And I the host knew me well and knew the rescue stories I had done, and so he asked me to tell these guys that story, and Eduardo said, we have to make this into a movie. And he wanted to be that part of playing me. And so I'm like, hey, I'm good with a producer playing me in the film.
my only, I guess, point to that was, I just think it's just a great story. And what I loved about it, I should finish it up. Paul can say his movie's great. I want to back that up by saying the movie was done so phenomenally well that you see what's going on, but it's not graphic. Mm-hmm. And you see it there, and the storyline and the emotions, there's not a lot of dialogue, but the way Jim acts through it and the reality of it and the transformation of the characters, there's a moral premise to this story where the person that Jim meets, who used to be working for the mafia, the cartel, and now is working. I mean, it's just done so well. And that's what I loved about it. And I came out thinking to myself, well, it is, and there's redemption. And at the end, I felt really good about it, saying, okay, that was a great story and there's hope. We always want hope in movies. And I just want to commend you for doing such an amazing job with such little budget and just with tough content to be able to deliver it that, I mean, a 12-year-old can watch it and an adult can watch it and they can actually enjoy it and say, okay, I love what's come from it.
Thank you. Thank you, Gino. In fact, you know, when we were trying to figure out the best team to take this film, to take this message to the world, we talked with some guys at Paramount and Lionsgate and Sony and others. And we ended up going with what we called Team Mexico. This was Eduardo Verástegui and Alejandro Monteverde, because I had just finished watching one of their films called Little Boy. Little Boy didn't do amazing in the box office because it was promoted as a religious-based film, but it was one of the best ways of showing faith of any film that I've seen. Just absolutely beautifully done. And a film that they did before Little Boy was one called Bella. And today there are thousands of children alive today that their mothers were considering abortion, but chose to mm-hmm. keep their babies after watching Bella. And that we thought, you know mm-hmm. what? These are men of God. These are men with the right heart and the right passion that can take a delicate subject and beautifully write it into a script and into a film that's going to transform people's lives. That's what we wanted.
It's the Jake and Gino show. So I've got one more question before my wife starts asking questions, because to me, this is important, because this is what I think embodies Paul Hutchinson as a super successful business person. This didn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. This took years and years and no's and going back to the drawing board. Can you share with me what gave you the strength and the conviction to continue along the path after getting so many no's and almost having this project blow up?
Yeah. Well, when you have a commitment, when you have a dream and a goal that nothing can step in your way, that's where, you know, successful business owners and entrepreneurs, you've got to have that vision, that dream of where you're going. And this was stronger than anything in business to me. This was when I, you know, seeing that little girl, when I was sitting there in front of her and she was crying and scared to death, I made a commitment to myself, to God, and to that child, that I would use all my resources to eradicate that from the face of the earth. There was nothing more evil that I could imagine. And I knew that we couldn't just take the average person and have them see what I saw. Somehow, we needed to help them feel that same emotion so that they could step forward and create a movement. That's what we wanted to do from the beginning. I wasn't interested in investing in a movie just so that I could get a return on the movie. I'm not a movie investor. I was interested in investing in something that would create a movement, a legacy for my kids and grandkids that they could be proud of, that I made a significant, powerful, positive impact in the lives of millions, if not billions of people. And so when we first took that story out, we had a bunch of roadblocks. You know, the big Hollywood guys were interested in the storyline, but it came with a caveat. They wanted full control. They could have changed the story however they wanted. They could have put one of my operators in a precarious situation with one of the kids and doing horrible things to him or whatever. They could have tabled the story for 20 years and never done anything with it. So that's where we decided, you know what, the only way to really do this, we have to do it privately. So I'm going to fund that myself and put that forward and then write the script, and then we'll bring in some other private money to do so. But then even after it was finished, We had distribution set up with Fox International, who was one of our earlier investors as well. And they were bought out by Disney. And then all of a sudden there was zero interest in distributing. In fact, we had to actually buy them out, which was, you know, heavy at the time. And so then we start going out to different distributors and we're getting turned down by all of these big guys. Guys that bring you crap like Cuties, you know, they put that out and they turn us down. Are you kidding me? Right? All these big Hollywood distributors, we had guys from that used to be executives from Disney that committed to bring in $20 million worth of distribution. They tied up the contract for months and months and months and months, and then all of a sudden disappeared. So I'm thinking, wow. Am I the only guy who thinks this is a good movie? You know, is this going to end up being a coaster on, you know, just a CD on my table to put my cups on? You know, is it never going to be out there to create a movement? And it wasn't until the Angel Studios, where this is a system of for the people, by the people. a grassroots movement of good Christian people who helped bring out the TV series The Chosen, that said, you know what, this is something we can get behind, and our people can get behind this, and we can push this message to the world.
Yeah. Paul, and you know, like Gino said earlier, when I kind of tricked him into watching the movie, which I did, and that's okay, because it is so easy for society to turn their face away from evil. They don't want to see it. They don't want to know about it. It's just an easier life if I don't know what's happening in the world, right? Because once you know the truth, now you're obligated to do something. And I think that's why people rather not see it. But when I sat there, my husband kept saying, I want to leave. I want to leave. And he wasn't talking to me. He's just literally talking out loud. He's like, I want to go. I'm going to go. And I'm like, just wait, just wait. And the movie, and then at the end, there was this beautiful message from Jim Caviezel about hope. And that's where a lot of us are right now, where we've seen it. We're aware of what's going on. We're horrified. We're horrified we let it get this far, to be honest. Because how did society get to this far? I know how, because they, you know, if you think about it, the media made it okay to be attracted to kids. All of a sudden, that was okay. You're no longer called a pedophile. You know what I mean? There's little by little, they did it, and they successfully did it. And now what's happening is, I think we're the number one consumer of this in the United States. I mean, the numbers are in the world, and the numbers are horrific. And you're like, oh, it's not in my area. But it is. Yes. I promise you it is. And so there's moms out there like me that we feel honestly helpless. We want to fix the problem. We want to save the kids. We want to do all these things, but we don't know what to do.
Oh, I can
and
help
so
with that.
Can you give us some guiding? Yes, Paul. That's what I'm dying to know, how we can help.
Now, my answer is actually going to surprise you. You need to hug your kids. Okay, let me explain. Yeah. The most likely children to be brought into trafficking are ones from a broken foster care program, from runaways, from broken homes. Those are the ones that are getting sucked in. Or the ones that are being groomed are ones that go to school with low self-esteem because they're having a really difficult time at home, and their captors are going to groom them into the point where they can take them. And I can tell you hundreds of stories of this happening everywhere. However, the chances of an affluent family having their child abducted and taken to another country in a container ship is really low. The chances of your child being sexually abused by somebody your family knows is extremely high. Literally, 40% of all women have been a victim of sexual abuse at some time in their life. 1/4 of all women, literally a billion throughout the world, they experienced that sexual violence as a child. As a child. Now, with men, it's a little bit less. It's 1 in every 5. It's about 20% of all men have been a victim of sexual violence. However, 1/4 of them, literally 200 million men in this world, it was under the age of 10 years old, and it was in their own homes. Now, let's talk about this. How does somebody grow up to be a pedophile? Yes, you're right. We've allowed Hollywood and our social media to desensitize us, take us down this road, take us away from the divine nature of intimacy. And people believe that pornography is a victimless crime. It's not. When you take a woman from a divine feminine to an object, you start going down a dark road. And when we start objectifying others or seeing others as commodities in any way, then it leads us away from God. It leads us away from our moral principles. And it makes it so that slowly these people get addicted. And they need something harder to have that same fix. And harder is a little bit younger, a little bit younger, a little bit younger. Pretty soon they're fantasizing about things they wouldn't have even thought was attractive 5, 10 years ago. That combined with what I'm going to call unresolved childhood trauma is a formula for disaster. Disaster. Now, everybody who's watching this right now has probably seen pornography. Doesn't mean you're going to become a pedophile. But every single one of these guys, it started out with an addiction that led to something darker and darker. And you take that combined with the fact that the majority of them were raped as children themselves. Now, that doesn't make it okay. When people ask me a lot, they say, Paul, how can you go face to face with somebody selling an 8-year-old child and not have them see the anger and hatred in your eyes? And my answer surprises them. It's because I feel compassion for them. Oh, you can't feel compassion. They're selling you an 8-year-old. No, I will do everything in my power to ensure they never hurt innocence again. But what I wish more than anything is that I had a time machine and I could go back 5 years, 10 years, 20 years before they ever touched a child. And if I could find out at that point what in the world happened in their life, I'm sure there was 1,000 bad things that happened to them and 1,000 bad decisions that they made that got them to the point where they thought that was okay. But if I'm going to live a truly Christ-like life, I've got to look at this whole situation like Christ did, from a position of true compassion, and say, okay, I don't have a time machine, and I'm sure as hell not going to allow these guys to be out free and hurting other children, right? But what I do have is hundreds of millions of people who, if not given the help they need, you know, these are adolescents and teenagers and young adults who don't have kids yet, who haven't passed it on. Now, understand this, two-thirds of everybody who have experienced that kind of trauma as a child, two-thirds of them grow up to be wonderful moms and dads. They use that trauma to motivate them to ensure that children are protected in every way. However, one out of every three people who are abused that way as a child end up becoming contact offenders themselves. And this generational trauma is not just offending one child. It's 10, 20, up to 100 children. This is why this number is growing exponentially, not only in abuse in the home, but in the demand for child trafficking. So if we're going to fix this problem, we need to, number one, fix the demand side. Give these people the love and the hope and the help that they need before they ever pass that trauma on. And number two, ensure that our children have a healthy home where they're not ending up in an abusive situation or in a foster home or a runaway or being one of those that are easily groomed into being a victim. Mm-hmm. So it's a long answer to your question, but that's something every one of us can do. And that really is what is at the root of the problem.
Mm. Yeah.
But let me ask you also, do you think legislation can help as well? Because I think there has to be consequences. I think if the penalties are harsh for people committing these crimes, I mean, traffickers, I mean, the people who are going out and doing is one thing, but if you're trafficking, it's almost like gun violence. There's 300 something million guns in this country. You're not going to be able to remove all the guns, but at least let's make it a harsher penalties for committing crimes with people who are having these guns illegal. I'm just branching that off. But the same thing with here. If you're promoting it and you're selling it, I mean, that there should be some really harsh penalties for these people. I don't know about the death penalty. Maybe. Let's look at that. But I think if you can stem that, it'll make it more difficult. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I'd vote for castration, actually. You know, the reality is, if that's the problem, if your right eye offendeth you, pluck it out. You know, we're already told what to do if somebody is using those sexual powers to abuse children. You know, and yes, it's better that a millstone be hung around their neck and they be drowned in the depths of the sea than to offend these little ones. And so absolutely, absolutely, there needs to be harsh penalties. And but at the same time, if we put everybody in prison that has globally, that has physically or sexually offended and hurt somebody else illegally, if we put them all in prison, our prisons would be completely full. And that's probably what needs to happen, right? But more important than that, if our goal is to get to a place where this isn't a thing, it's not just putting people in prison. Yes, you've got to have a deterrent, but you've also got to figure out what in the world is happening to get them to that point. What are the other links in the chain, right? This is why our foundation and others that are fighting child trafficking, it's breaking that chain. Why is that? Because the end link on that chain is the abuse of a child. But what if three or four or five or six other links earlier in the Child Liberation Foundation, our logo is the universal sign for something being sold with the barcodes, with the chain down the middle, with it broken. Why? Because we need to break that chain way before it gets to the point of an abuse of a child, way before that. Mm-hmm. And I believe that just harsher penalties is right there almost to the end. They're already there, right? And so, So we've got to figure out how to break that chain way down the road when they're kids, when they're adolescents. We need to change the Hollywood input that's coming in. We need to change their perceptions of themselves. We need to help them shed that trauma and change the direction of their life.
Paul, you've been involved for probably the last decade or so. In your opinion, why do you think this is being stifled or it's not being amplified, this message out there, the powers that be? I mean, it's only an opinion that you have. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's more than opinion. The darkness of this goes all the way to the bottom and all the way to the top. Mm-hmm. Okay? There are the reason why I was recruited to come and help and lead some of these undercover rescue missions is because of the Jeffrey Epsteins in the world, right? Wealthy, connected, powerful men and women who have big egos that get to the point where, you know, they can inflict pain on whoever without consequence. They say that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And unfortunately, we live in a world where there's a lot of people who believe they have a degree of absolute power because of their checkbooks, because of their connections, because of their mm-hmm. positions in government and Hollywood, etc. And so when you have that kind of unbridled power together with some of the darkness that happens in those circles, then there's people on all levels that are involved, and they don't want the masses to mm-hmm. to do this massive push and work on eradicating this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paul, I want to get to your private missions, but before, I just want to make, you know, my husband likes the adventure part of the movie where he physically goes in and rescues. I mean, it was awesome, incredible. But the part of the movie where it really, maybe it's just the mother's heart, I don't know, but it was the ex cartel character. And when he spoke about his eyes being open during a memory that he was having, he was explaining to the audience about when he was with a prostitute and his eyes were open as if he was seeing this woman through God's eyes. And it was so beautiful. And it reminds us that we do have to pray for these people, for their conversions, and so that their eyes are open and they see the innocence of these children, because it is possible. I mean, here you have this probably a super wealthy cartel, you know, guy who God changed him. You know, and have you seen that more in this field?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, he's a real person. His name is Steve. We call him Batman and not Vampiro, because we couldn't use the name Batman, but that's what we call him. He technically wasn't part of the rescue mission on the island in Cartagena. He was involved mm-hmm. in some other missions before. And like I say, we took multiple characters. In fact, what makes me sad is that there are countless hidden heroes that we had to take mm-hmm. all of their stories and the different missions and put them all in together with a limited number of characters mm-hmm. in the mission. So, you know, not everything that Jim did was done by Tim. Not everything that Vampiro did was done by Steve. You know, these were all different people. In fact, you know, I wasn't the only person that funded that mission. There was other people that were involved in the funding side of that. So we took multiple characters together. But yes, that change of heart I have seen over and over again. And when you're in that depth of darkness and you're seeing the depravity of human nature and where the end link of that chain ends up, You have two choices. You either break down and cry and never recover, or you look heavenward and say, God, help us. And how can we see this from your eyes so that we can truly create redemption?
Mm, incredible.
Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
Now, I've got a question about the slogan that they speak throughout the movie, and I think it's great. God's children are not for sale. How did you come up with that? I mean, it's just really, you're a business person. That's like a catalyzing statement. Get it there in under 30 minutes. I mean, like, if you really want to understand the title of a story or really what it's about, at Jake and Gino, we say we create multifamily entrepreneurs. I can go on and on. But when you read that, it just sticks in your mind. And who can argue against that? I mean, I don't know who. I mean, if you can, more power to you. You're a really good convincer. But that's such a powerful statement.
Well, and we had to be careful because we didn't want to be too religious in the film. Understand, in real life, every one of our operations starts with a prayer, right? I remember one time I was 4 or 5 years into doing undercover work, and I had a new team, a bunch of ex-Navy SEALs, Green Berets, and we were out for a few hours and hadn't really connected with any traffickers. And I said, guys, can I take lead? Are you good with that? And they're like, yeah, we heard you're really good at this. I want to see what you do. I said, okay, first things first, I need you to understand that I believe in God. I said, most people believe in a supreme being. Some people call God the universe or Allah, or they think he's a mountain or a cloud or whatever. It doesn't matter. I said, God exists and cares more about these children than you and I ever could, and knows exactly where they are. So if you're okay with it, I'm going to start out by asking for some help. So here we are, downtown Port-au-Prince, Haiti, the darkest, most voodoo-infested place on the planet at the time. And we take off our hats and offer up a prayer. And then I say, now I need you to understand how I operate on these missions. I said, I call it the still small voice. It's something that all of us are born with. Some might call it intuition. I said, let me tell you how I see fear and faith. Some people think that faith is going to church and asking God to fix things in their life that they don't believe are going to be fixed. I said, that's not faith. Faith is a principle of power. It's the most powerful law in the universe. And it's simply this: it's the unwavering conviction that what I want to have happen will happen. The problem is most people have a hard time with unwavering conviction about anything. Should I marry this woman? Should I start this new job? It's easy for me to have unwavering conviction that we're going to find these kids, because I don't care if you think that God is a rock or a flower or whatever else. There's no God in the universe that's okay with a child being sold for sex, period. Mm-hmm. And so with that unwavering faith, I was able to see miracles unlike anything in my entire life, in being led to where these children were and being protected every step of the way. So the God part about rescuing these children was very strong on every rescue operation, but we couldn't show all of that. But having that one slogan, God's children are not for sale, kind of sums it all up.
Mm-hmm. Paul, tell us about your private missions, because it's not just the movie. And I want people to know that it's not just one mission that happened. And you caught all these horrible people. Tell us about what is happening right now with your missions, with other people's.
Yeah, we've had lots and lots of them. In fact, ones that we've helped to fund with other organizations and ours, thousands of children have been rescued and brought back to their families. I had a bunch of them just last year in Latin America. We helped take down 6 different trafficking rings. One story that I think would be valuable for your listeners: there was one little girl. She was taken to Peru. What had happened is her mother was killed when she was very young, at 8 years old. Her dad was a raging alcoholic. She was sent to live with her aunt and uncle. By the time she was 10, she was being raped by her uncle. She told the family nobody believed her. By the time she was 12, she was the perfect suspect for the traffickers. Super low self-esteem, being raped all the time. Much older boy, a man who befriended her, said, "Hey, I can take care of you," convinced her to leave with him and go to Peru. And once she got to Peru, he took away her passport, took away her phone, bought her really sexy clothes, and said, "This is what you're going to be doing. You're going to be bringing in $1,000 a day minimum with these men. You're going to be out on the street, and you're going to be being taken around to all of these different hotels. And if you don't bring in $1,000 a day, or if you try to leave us or anything, we're going to beat you up." She ended up getting beat up severely. She ended up in the hospital because of how severely she was beat up. And we were called at that point. And my wife speaks fluent Spanish, and she works with a lot of the aftercare. Had some great conversations with her. We identified where she was being trafficked out of. We took down that entire ring, arrested a whole bunch of pedophiles, rescued over 20 more children there. The problem is where does she go back to now, right? Mm-hmm. You can't send her back to her uncle. Not to her family. And in fact, in her life, her boyfriend that beat her up, that was prostituting her, her quote boyfriend, was a better place for her to be than her family with her uncle. So you've got to put these kids in safe houses and give them the rehabilitation that they need and the love that they need and the family that they need to overcome it all. And so another one, there was a region in Haiti that was halfway between Port-au-Prince and Dominican Republic, super dangerous. It was a jungle area in there that they had some guys, the Homeland Security agent tried to go in with a couple other operators and got chased out. And so it was decided that I would go in posing as a doctor and put scrubs on and went in with another operator. In fact, there was a bunch of kids in this area that were being used. The drug guys in there were having them mill their drugs, et cetera. And we had some leads that a number of the children that were missing in the main cities were in this region. So we needed to go in and actually do nasal swabs with the kids to make sure that they were not being sick. But then we would compare those nasal swabs to the parents who had lost kids. And so that's where the idea of that movie came from, was some of those other jungle things that we've done with some of our operators that were multiple operators and multiple missions that were similar to that. And so, in real life, nobody got chased out with guns. We didn't have, the chase scene that was in there, but that stuff really does happen. And these kids are, 10 hours to the nearest police station with these traffickers that are using the kids for super horror. There was a 13-year-old who had a baby that she just turned 13. She was impregnated at 12 by one of the traffickers in the area. So yeah, it happens all the time. Go ahead.
Are there safe houses that where are they, and how does that work? Because where do you bring the children? Because that's something we think here in the United States, it's like, okay, bring them back home, but home is not the place to take them. So tell us what happens to the children.
If the parents reported them abducted, then it's easy to find them and get them back. But sometimes the parents were involved. Mm-hmm. Southeast Asia, more than half the kids that were rescued there were sold by their own families. Most of these kids came from broken foster care programs and things like this that the traffickers brought them from. And in that, you can't pull them out of hell and put them back in hell. They'll be back on the streets before you know it. And so we have safe houses. In fact, the you can go to liberatechildren.org. The Child Liberation Foundation has a new focus in what they call liberating wings. And they're building these physical wings. So we have different sponsors that will come in, and for $10,000, we'll sponsor the build out of a wing on one of these safe houses with the kids. And this wing is, a lot of these safe houses are bare bones. They're beds in a kitchen and a place for the therapist to come in and talk with the kids and to keep them safe and away. But there isn't really a lot of money that's been put into healing. So our focus with the Child Liberation Foundation is on healing, on the healing wings, physical expansions that are teaching them trades, that are helping with everything from breath work to art therapy to other things that are going to help them get rid of that trauma and live a normal life.
Yeah.
I want to ask a question about your wife and compare to my wife. Is your wife the type of person who has a lot of energy, who wants you to retire, and then when you retire, she's got these wonderful ideas and she continues you to work and says, I've got this idea, I've got that idea. But you know, I'm going to keep it to myself, but I've got this idea. And she's got me working ragged right now. And I see
that's
your
the
bio.
Best part.
You're a retired philanthropist.
Well, I actually
that I see ATEC defense systems.
Well, I'll tell you this. Yeah, in fact, I've sold a bunch of those other companies recently. We're full-time focused on Child Liberation Foundation and liberating humanity. I actually met my wife in Haiti. On that undercover rescue mission in the jungle, I was there with Jim. He was one of the operators in Haiti. He ended up getting killed, and I was at his funeral, and Ada Vanessa is my wife now. This was about 5 years ago, and I met her at his funeral, and it was bittersweet being at his funeral. But you know, she was a pretty well known actress in Colombia. At one point, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing her face on a poster. In fact, she knew most of the actors and actresses that were filmed in the movie. She had worked with them in previous times. And I tell people, meeting a beautiful Colombian actress is kind of cool, but when she's donating her time at an orphanage in Haiti, that's amazing. And so now she is full-time focused. She's the executive director of the Child Liberation Foundation, as well as working on some other movies. She just finished one where she's an assassin who kills bad assassins. She has a couple others that she's working on right now with a new production company that spread more awareness when it comes to anti-trafficking, et cetera. So yeah, we are definitely not retired. We work 12 hours a day or more traveling the world together and eradicating trafficking and healing humanity.
I felt that because I
don't
could
know
see
what
that
retirement
see, yes.
means for you guys. You know what I mean? I really don't. Like when someone under, like when my husband said it, he was under 50. I'm like, I'm not going to retire. What does retirement mean? Oh my gosh. But I see a lot of, you know, potential for you.
Paul, before we wrap the show up, I want that website again. Where can the listeners get a hold of you? Where can they donate money? The Sound of Freedom is still going on in theaters right now. So where can people get more information?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. So two things. First of all, you can go directly to the Child Liberation Foundation by going to liberatechildren.org. So liberatechildren.org will take you to the Child Liberation Foundation. You can get a lot of tools to teach you how to be looking for trafficking. You can donate $1. You can donate $1,000, $100,000. You can get in touch with them on helping with some of the healing retreats and safe houses, et cetera. On a more global standpoint in fixing the demand side and everything else, we just launched a new website called liberating-humanity.com. And there's a lot of really good resources there. We're pulling in together a lot of people who have tools not only to help heal, but to help keep your family safe. For example, one of my good friends is one of the top edged weapons trainers and improvised weapons trainers in the world. He trains the three-letter agencies. He trains SEALs. He's really, really good. And especially on situational awareness, we're bringing his entire course onto Liberating Humanity so that you can have access to that. Even my Krav Maga trainer, who's one of the best in the world, we have a bunch of videos with him. Within the next month, all of those will be available on the Liberating Humanity website, liberating-humanity website, as well as different meditation exercises, breathwork exercises, other things that people can work on to shed their trauma and work through some of those issues so that they can move forward. And then we're also going to be setting up some healing retreats for adults in Latin America, where you can come in for 4 or 5 days for a fully immersive transformational healing experience to help shed whatever trauma is holding you back and not letting you live the life that you really want to live.
Mm.
If that's what retirement sounds like, I can't even imagine the work schedule you had when you had to make money. So, Julie, this is the time when Jake.
I know.
This is the moment when Jake asks me to wrap the show.
I don't wrap it. I just have one more question because it's an important one. So I'm out now all the time. I'm looking at other families because I want to be aware of what's going on because I know it's in my community. I know it's here. Tell me and tell the listeners just quickly because I know it's on the website as well. What to look for. And if you see something very suspicious, what do you do?
Yeah, you need to. Well, first of all, what to look for. Any significant changes in behavior in the kids. If you're a teacher and all of a sudden, you know, one of your kids has a significant change of behavior where they're super low self-esteem and they're not engaging like they were, there's chance, very high chance that there's challenges going on at home. The kids who end up having, you know, physical things, bruises, of course, those are easy to see, but there's a lot of kids who, you know, they're not available at all after school because they have their own extracurricular activities. And some of those are being trafficked as well. We've seen a lot of that. It's also important to be watching where your kids and others are, how they're handling their social media. We've had a number of cases where we were undercover and the traffickers were bringing in some of their new victims by scouring the social media, finding out where the kids were going to be and when, what ones didn't have very good parental supervision, who was traveling internationally without their parents or who looked like they didn't have, you know, that healthy home life, et cetera. Those are definitely targets for the traffickers as well. And there's hotlines on our website that you can call and get help, get some extra information. There's, of course, your local law enforcement. And now more than ever, good people in law enforcement are stepping up saying, okay, now that we've got the support of the community behind us in a very strong way, we're going to pay close attention to what's going on here and start taking down these pedophiles before they're abusing these children.
That's so helpful. And I just want to say it's everywhere. It's not just in one little community and, you know, the poorer community or the super wealthy. It's in the church. It's in the media. Yeah. It's in the government. It literally is next door. And I want to make that clear because a lot of people are like, well, it's not in my little neighborhood. Yes, it is. And yeah. I want to be clear on that because like I said earlier, sometimes we just turn our face because it's so much easier. Mm-hmm. And it's really important that we all become aware of what's going on and face the truth and decide to do something. So I just want to thank you because this is such an eye opener for so many of us. Yeah.
So real quick, Jake would want me to wrap this up. So he's not here. So I'll do it for him. So, and I know my wife does not listen to my podcast for more than 3 seconds. So she never gets to the end of it. So she's finally at the end of the Jake and Gino show because she probably listened to me for 5 minutes and go, G Dad, you're not, I don't want to hear you. But anyway, what I think is most powerful in this story is when you know, Paul Hutchinson gets that phone call of saying, hey, can you donate? Can you go to this island and create this haven and this pretend thing of getting these traffickers onto this island? And when Paul gets to the island and he sees that little girl there and he sees that she's crying and she sees the makeup and he wants to say to her, está bien, you know, todo va a estar bien, but he must have felt the pain and the anguish at that moment. And then that hour later, when he hears that sound of freedom, that those joy, that laughter, all of a sudden something was switched, I think, in his heart and his mind. And he saw how real it was and how much of an impact it is. It's wonderful to make $2 billion and to have all that net worth. It's great having the impact on your family and your employees, but to be able to extend that outwards from your own inner circle to make a worldwide movement, to start a movie, to be stuck in it for 7 years, to get bought out and then to get the rights taken and then have to buy out the investors and then continue along that journey to have that mission and to have that belief of what you're doing and then to ultimately see it pull through, you know, kudos to you. And liberatechildren.org. I challenge everyone to go out there, check out the website and donate money. If you're out there and you want to make a difference in the world, this is how we make the difference in the world.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on the show, Paul. We really appreciate it.
And I just want to leave by saying, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.
Yeah,
because that's the next generation. And, you know, mentor Paul, I just want to thank you again for spending time with us because I know you're a busy man. And so I'm honored that you're here with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Gina.
Any final words to our listeners?
No, I'm super grateful for this time to be able to share. And Gino did a great job in, you know, bringing it right down to that moment that changed everything. All of us need to have that transformational moment in our life. If it was watching the movie and just feeling that pain, whatever it is, let's step forward in the light and let's love our kids and let's liberate all of humanity from this evil that is this canker that is creating child trafficking.